The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.
Hi, I'm Candace Michelle, and welcome to another episode of Our Community, a show in which I get to talk to some of the fascinating people who live here. People who weren't born and raised here end up moving here for a lot of different reasons. Most of them have something to do with the incredible landscape here. Certainly a huge draw is the fishing, and my guest today is one of those fishermen, Dave Keene, from the Oregon South Coast Fishermen. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you, Candace. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it is a pleasure to have you here. I love the salmon. I just love, I mean, you know.
Likewise.
Yeah, exactly. So we will definitely talk about that. But why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? You know, where were you before you came here? What did you do during your life here?
Okay. Well, once upon a time, I was born.
Yay!
Happened to be in Elmira, New York.
Oh.
And that's kind of the theme of our salmon here. That's why I threw that out there.
Where is Elmira, New York?
Upstate New York, but we moved out when I was 3 years old to California, so okay. I don't remember anything okay. about New York.
Okay.
So we moved out here when I was 3 years old, grew up in Santa Ana, but I grew up watching Disneyland, you know, those fireworks and Tinkerbell sliding down her thing. That was pretty cool for many years. Then we moved to San Fernando Valley. And then at age 16 in high school, I met my future wife, Mary Lou. So we were high school sweethearts. And we've been married not ever since. I think we dated for 9 years because had to make sure that she was the right one, of course.
Dave, really? And, 9 years?
No, eight. I think it was eight okay. years, actually. Really.
Okay.
8 years.
But that's a good way to make sure.
And so, yeah. And it worked. And we're, like I said, we're still happily married and loving the life up here, you know, dream in Brookings.
That's great.
But, okay. So
what kind of work did you do?
Well, I did, after high school, I went to college. And played college baseball at UC Santa Barbara.
Oh, what fun.
Wanted to be a professional baseball player, aspired to be that, and had a good career in college, but had a collision at home plate. I was a catcher, and that tended to ruin my shoulder, and I never threw the ball as hard as I used to. Not that that kept me from making, it's probably other reasons too, because I couldn't hit a curveball, kind of like that Clint Eastwood's movie. Can't hit the curve. But anyway, moving on to what your question was, I did the next best thing. I became a high school teacher.
Ooh.
And so my major was marine biology in college with some math minors and some other minors. And that actually helped me get employed at the high school in Santa Ynez Valley, where I was a high school teacher for 38 years, teaching science and math. And also coaching varsity football and varsity baseball.
Wow.
And my wife also taught at the same high school.
Huh.
And so part of my teaching, though, we have a beautiful, wonderful son and daughter, and I taught them in my class, but the class that I taught them was health, freshman health. And part of that was drug education and the sex education unit. So to teach your children the sex education in the same classroom. It was an interesting moment.
Yes.
It was interesting. I thought my son would have no problem. It was completely the opposite.
No kidding.
My son, I gave permission to walk out of the room anytime he wanted, which he did on a regular basis. My daughter just, no big deal, Dad. You know, that's okay. Talk about whatever you want. So
that's funny.
So that's kind of a funny part of that.
That is funny.
Moment. So I did the high school teaching for 38 years and finally retired. My wife retired, and it's in our blood because my son teaches high school math in Eureka, and our daughter teaches high school science, anatomy, physiology in Rockland near Sacramento.
Well, that's great because they're fairly close to you then.
Yes, that was part of the reason moving into Brookings.
Right.
We did live down in Santa Barbara County, which was very nice, and we loved it.
Farther away from the kids, though.
True.
Right?
There's something about that draw with your kids and then the grandbabies.
Oh, so you have grandkids?
We do.
Yay! What do you have?
We have two granddaughters, one that's 6 and a half and one that's 2 and a half.
Oh, wonderful.
And love them dearly. And now they only down in Blue Lake, which is just down the road from here.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But discovering Brookings was a whole nother story. I don't know if you want to hear that.
Yeah, I definitely want to know about that.
Well, it's pretty much a story of many people. Once you travel through the area and see what's here, it's like, whoa, that's a nice place. It looks really good. I wonder how we can live here.
Yeah.
So, but the journey, it really started back in the day when we would go to Trinity Lake up in Northern California. And being high school teachers, we could extend the vacation from 1 week to two to a month, which was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you stayed 2 months, it's kind of like we look for other things to do. We started traveling in Oregon and lake hopping all over Oregon and just loving Oregon, especially the Oregon State Parks. They're amazing. Well, we'd start doing the coastal route, and we'd come through Brookings, and we just kept saying, that is a beautiful place. So we stayed at Alfred Loeb a few times, Harris Beach a few times, started dreaming about a home on the river, because we've always liked water.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, in June of 2013, we bought a place right on the Chetco River, and here we are.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So that's my story.
It's like a fairy tale, right?
I feel it is. And we just have no regrets at all leaving Santa Barbara area. We just thoroughly love it.
And Santa Barbara is absolutely gorgeous. I lived in Southern California for a while. But, you know, there's an awful lot of people there.
Yes.
And for my taste, I really like something a little slower, a little less people. I remember when we were looking at property up here, the deciding factor for me was that I wanted to check out the library because I really love libraries.
Right.
So I walked into the library and the librarian was there talking to a client, customer, and she said something like, Joe, I couldn't remember your last name there for a minute. And I thought, bingo. I want to live in a town where the librarian knows my name.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was, because really, I mean, how much better does it get than that?
Everybody was so friendly, too.
I mean,
before we even moved here, just going into various places to eat or wherever, it was just so inviting and very comfortable. And we did fall in love with the port itself. That whole atmosphere at the port was nice. But, you know, I know we're going to be talking about fishing in a bit, but I was a bass fisherman. I did lakes only. So when I moved here, this whole saltwater river fishing was new to me.
And interesting.
I adapted well.
Yes.
But it took a while.
Interesting. And,
but I love it now. It's
so awesome. So what is different about, I mean, a lake, it's different than the ocean and river and stuff, but I mean, what is different about it?
Well, let's see, a few things that come to mind. One, when you're in the lake, you don't have the swells and being seasick, which thank goodness I don't get, but some of my friends and my wife a little bit a little difficult to go into the ocean because of that. But in the lake, like we would target smallmouth bass or largemouth bass, and that's what we would catch, or you could target trout. You go fishing in the ocean, you just never know really what you're going to get. There's so many varieties and species of fish. That always excited me.
I know. That is kind of
exciting,
right?
Something's on my pole.
You never know what you're going to go home with.
I mean, obviously you're targeting salmon. Oftentimes when you get a fish on, it's going to be a salmon. But when you're rock fishing, there's a whole different array of species you can catch. So that's pretty cool.
It's great.
And then river fishing is different in that you got water moving, and it's more of a challenge because it can be shallow, and there's really a whole finesse aspect to it that's pretty fun to figure out.
I love that. I love that. So tell me about getting involved with the Oregon South Coast Fishermen.
Let's see. For me personally?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that happened in October of 2013 when I took a walk from my house up to Social Security Bar on North Bank, Chetco River Road.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was walking, I saw fishermen fishing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw a group of people that happened to be pulling in a net. And in the net were these huge salmon. I was just in awe. And I go, I want to do that. Looks like really a lot of fun. I want to do that. How do I get to do that? Well, it turned out that when I asked that question, they were the Oregon South Coast fishermen, volunteers, that were helping ODFW gather broodstock for the hatchery.
Right.
And I fell in love with it. I joined right then.
And they probably formed a circle around you and said, you're not going anywhere. You've now joined us.
Yeah. And then eventually, pretty quickly, I became president. That's...
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That wouldn't happen pretty too fast. Yeah. Well, everybody stepped back. I was just one standing forward and I didn't step forward.
See?
Here I am, president.
So have you learned that that's the way things happen here?
Yeah.
So you don't have to step forward.
Just, exactly.
You just need to remember to step
saw
back.
Saw that one. Didn't see it coming at the time.
That's very funny.
But it's going well.
I actually remember when I was working with the TV station here that I went out and filmed them doing that. It was probably in, I'm going to say, 2009, 2010 or something. But it was fascinating to watch them pull those huge fish in. And it just really... fascinating. I love it.
Well, if you're around Tuesday of next week, we're going to be we call it Salmon Rodeo, but it's the collection of salmon, mm-hmm. adult broodstock, mm-hmm. and we'll be doing it Tuesday at Social Security Bar. We're shooting for maybe 1 or 2 in the afternoon to pull
great.
The first net.
I'll actually be awake. So. I don't do things in the morning anymore.
You know, so getcha.
Being able to sleep in is really a delight if you're retired.
Understand.
Yes.
Yes.
So we've had the first rain of the season.
Yes.
Does that mean that the salmon now know it's okay to come on back up the river?
Well, we do have salmon in the system. Mm-hmm. I happen to went out this morning, early morning, and checked out a few places on the river. And sure enough, there were salmon rolling and boiling. There's people fishing for salmon. There are people that have been catching some of the salmon in the river. Of course, they recently came in from the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you might be familiar with the Chetco bubble season that we just went through.
I've heard it, and I'm pretty sure Rich Heap told me what it was. And I think it's just a window where you can fish, but I'm not positive.
Well, I can help you out on that.
Thank you.
Well, my pleasure. Our season ended August 26th. That's the ocean salmon season.
Okay.
Okay, it was over. Done. Could not keep a salmon any longer in the ocean.
Okay.
So then we always look forward to a bubble season. And what that means is you're going to target Chetco fish, Chetco-only fish. They're going to go up the river.
Okay.
And that's why we wait. It's done in early October, which we just did.
Mm-hmm.
During the ocean season, we're primarily catching Klamath salmon and Sacramento salmon.
I remember Rich said something about a lot of the salmon come down out of the river and take a right. Our salmon evidently come down and take a left.
Correct.
Our salmon are a little strange.
I know, and there's... a few others that do that, but because Klamath salmon in Sacramento take a right, those are the ones we tend to catch.
Right.
But on the negative side, they're also the ones that have been fewer and fewer in numbers and returns, and hence our season often is affected by that.
Right.
Shortened season, limited season, even a no season,
which we've had a couple of times, right?
But back to the bubble.
Yes.
That's the fun part is we are going to get Chetco River salmon coming in. And years ago, we had a 14-day bubble season, and it was shortened to 11 days. Well, now, the last 2 years, it was only 4 days.
Wow.
But still, it's 4 days. We have an opportunity to catch salmon.
So where are you catching the salmon? Right at, like, the mouth of the Chetco?
They are caught in the estuary and the mouth, but the actual bubble refers to a 3-mile extension into the ocean.
Okay, because most of the other salmon have gone back to wherever they're going.
All the other salmon, they're all staging at their respective rivers, getting ready to go upstream. So all these Chetco fish are in the ocean, also some in the estuary where they're being caught.
Right.
And so for the 4 days, Saturday, Sunday, the 6th and 7th, and then the Saturday, Sunday, 13th, 14th, we had our bubble. The first weekend, I happened to catch a fish on Saturday. And a fish on Sunday. So I was very happy because you only get one fish instead of two.
Oh, okay.
And they have to be 28 inches in length instead of 24.
Oh.
24 during the regular season.
Okay.
And so that's important to remember. When some people did not know that, then it involves a citation, of course, if they're not 28 inches.
Right.
And so that was a good weekend. And then the second weekend I went, it was a little tougher fishing because we had big winds just recently. And so I didn't get any, and there were fewer fish actually caught.
So when you talk about a 28-inch fish, how much that is that in poundage?
Oh, exactly. Trying to estimate. Let's see. I caught a 42-inch salmon, and it happened to be 40 pounds.
Oh.
That was Saturday. That's a big salmon.
Okay.
That was like, that's the biggest salmon I've ever caught. So in your 28.
Imagine trying to get that.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow.
So in the 28, 29 inches, you're probably in your high teens to maybe low 20s.
Okay.
And then it goes up, you know,
great,
accordingly.
Okay.
So.
So
yeah.
I've heard the story of the salmon, you know, how they start out and go down, come up, all that stuff.
Well.
But I would love like to hear.
Should
it
we
again.
Take a little, like a virtual field trip on the life cycle of salmon and see where
I
we end up?
I would love it.
Being a teacher, I always try to teach visual aids because they're hands-on learning because they tend to remember better. So.
Absolutely.
I guess we could give it a go. I haven't done that. Let me take a sip of
water. Absolutely. I'm very excited about
this. Let's see. All right. Off the top of my head, we're going to start our journey. Okay, we're going to start our journey as eggs, fertilized eggs, in the Checo River.
Got it.
Somewhere up the river.
Okay.
And let's say we're in a group of 100 eggs that are in the gravel.
Okay.
And that's
probably
called,
laid by one fish.
Yes, but could have been fertilized by
more than one
male.
Got
yes.
it. Okay.
And so she laid her eggs, dug the hole, laid the eggs, got fertilized. And let's say there's 100 of us.
Okay.
That number becomes important to help demonstrate what happens.
Okay.
So we have 100 of us. And so all of a sudden, one day, we hatch. And now we're little guys.
Aww.
And we're just, you know, hanging out and
having fun,
but also realizing there might be some dangers out there.
Ooh.
And so we grow a little bit and become smolt. And those are the little guys.
S-M-O-L-T.
Correct.
Smolt.
We are now salmon smolt. So there's still 100 of us. So let's say now I'm your brother, you're my sister, and we're swimming around and we're feeding and we're starting to get acclimated to the environment, but there's also these things flying around, and all of a sudden our cousin over there, Jimmy, is no longer here because Jimmy was eaten by a cormorant, or maybe Sally, her cousin, was eaten by a merganser because they feed on smolt.
And these are birds.
These are birds, yep. The birds are starting to take us out. We're now... Me and you, hey, sis, we got to figure this out. We got to stay alive here.
All
so
right.
we go, okay, here
Absolutely.
Comes a shadow over us. Let's hide. And so we go hide because we learned.
Yes.
And some of our other buddies have not learned.
Okay.
So they kind of picked off. But we start growing a little more, and then we start migrating. We start moving down the river. Okay? We're going to go that way.
We must feel like we need to go down the river.
There is that, you know, we just got to go.
Okay.
And we're going with the flow.
Okay.
And,
which is a nice thing, flowing down the river.
So maybe we had 100 of us to start, but now we're down to 80 or 70, let's say, because they've been picked off.
Okay.
And there's more birds on the way down.
Mm.
Okay. And as we get down further, there might be even some bigger fish that start taking our friends.
Yes.
Cousins, relatives.
But not us.
No, because we're smart.
Okay, we're smart. Okay.
We're trying to be the smart ones.
Yeah.
So we finally get into the ocean as bigger smolt.
Okay.
And now we look, whoa, this is huge. Way bigger than the river we were in.
Right.
And we're free. However, there's now bigger fish and there's other animals out there to eat us.
Uh-oh.
But we are smart. Like I said, sis, we've done well
we
start getting bigger and bigger. And we've moved up wherever we want to go, down the ocean, then out into the ocean. And we start getting bigger and bigger. And but then there's other things chasing us like seals and sea lions.
Really?
And orca whales.
Wow.
They all take a very big toll on our population, our numbers. We're like candy to them. They like to eat us.
Hmm.
However.
That's unfortunate.
It is part of that predation thing.
Yeah.
So, but we make it to 4 years old, and we are so happy to be hanging out and being big salmon.
Fat and sassy.
Yeah, we're probably in that 40-pound range now.
Ooh, bada-bing. You know?
And so all of a sudden we're going, you know, I feel something. We've got to go back to where we were born. Do you feel it, sis?
I do. This urge.
Yeah. It's like we got to go.
Right.
And
like
so
there's a bell ringing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we go, well, which way do we go? Oh, I know which way to go. We go that way because that's where we were born. I know that's the way to go. And so we start heading back to the Chetco River. But on the way, there's more predators, and they're still trying to eat us. Mm-hmm. And there's those people called humans. Now, they are throwing these real neat little baits at us. And some of our friends and that were part of our original 100 are caught as adults on the way back. Huh. And it could be by commercial fishermen or recreational fishermen, but that's why we're there.
Yeah.
It's part of the angling opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're hoping to get back to the river.
We are.
Alive.
Yes.
So.
So that we can reproduce.
Exactly.
Because that is the whole point.
Yes. Got it.
Got it. You're pretty smart.
You're good. So let's see. Well, we get back. We're getting closer. And now there's the bubble season. We don't know much about a bubble season, but we realize there's a lot of boats out trying to catch us.
Yep.
And they still catch some of our friends that were in the original 100.
But we're still pretty smart, you and
yes,
me.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
And we get into the estuary. Now, that's the part that's just inside the jaws of the harbor. That's the north jetty and south jetty.
It's kind of salty and fresh.
Yes,
kind of
fresh water coming down. But we notice there's not a lot of fresh water because it hasn't rained very much.
Ah.
So we go in and hang out. We go back out in the ocean. We're kind of waiting for that surge of fresh water because that'll tell us we're going to go upriver.
Right.
So we finally get a little bit of rain. And now, oh, it's time to go. But on the way in the river, we got the seals and sea lions and more of those humans that are trying to catch us.
No kidding.
Yep.
Still.
It's still after us.
Amazing.
Ever since we were a little smolt, we've been chased.
Yes.
By something, a predator.
By something, yeah.
So, but we being smart, we finally get upriver past the gauntlet of the seals and the sea lions. Birds aren't a problem because we're too big for the birds at this point.
Who's going to mess with
us?
Yeah.
But then we got those fishermen all the way up the river. They're still catching salmon. But we happen to make it upriver. And we can breathe a sigh of relaxation, relief because we made it.
Yes.
Nobody's trying to catch us right now.
Yes.
Because we made it far enough upriver.
Right.
And so we finally end up, well, it's time to spawn. We spawn the eggs, the milt that fertilizes the eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And we rejoice by dying. Because the salmon's journey, after all that, is one of, it's time to protect.
We're done.
Yeah, we are done.
Yeah, we're done.
But our nutrients that go back into the system that help the whole river system. And so me and you were the only survivors of that first 100 fish.
No way.
And if you do the percentages, that's about 2%.
Wow.
So that tends to be like the survival rate percentage of say, 1,000 100,000.
No kidding.
So there's about a 2% return
rate. That's not
a
big percentage.
No. That's why there are lots of eggs and there's lots of young to start to hopefully make it back and replenish the population.
I think that's a fascinating journey and I'm so glad I got to go on it.
Oh, cool. Well, I hope our listeners out there kind of caught on what we were doing and went on the journey with us.
I think it's just great.
Yeah.
I also remember when I was working with the TV station that there was a group and I went with them and I think it was ODF and W and the South Coast fishermen.
Right.
And we were seining in the estuary. Does that make sense?
Yes. We
were bringing in the little guys and checking them for weight and length,
right,
just to see how they were doing.
Yes, we did that. And we do three river seines in the estuary, three times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, three is three, of course. And what we do is we seine the river. Like you saw us pulling the net.
Mm-hmm.
And we are looking and sampling the smolt. And we count how many are in that particular seine.
Mm-hmm.
And we record how many. We measure them. And then we put them back in the system. And that gives us an idea of, well, what are the returns? How is it looking for this population of this year's smolt? And so we do that, and that data becomes very valuable later on. So that is the Checo estuary seining that you saw.
And it seems to me that it from what I could see, that the Oregon South Coast fishermen are invaluable to ODF&W.
Well, we work really well together. I mean, if you look at our mission statement, we are what is called a STEP program.
Mm-hmm.
STEP means Salmon and Trout Enhancement Program. And that we work closely with ODFW as volunteers to do what help them with all these things as far as manpower.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great, great group of volunteers that do this in our organization.
And it's fascinating to watch it. I mean, it's just, it's fascinating.
Oh, that's how I got into the whole organization.
Yeah.
I went, that is so cool what they're doing. I want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And you learn so much. The whole salmon thing is just remarkable to me. There are not many fish that start out in freshwater, move to salt, and then come back.
Correct.
To fresh.
I mean, we have our cousin, the steelhead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's another thing that comes up. And if you're a steelhead, you do hatch in the freshwater, like salmon,
mm-hmm.
and you do go out to the ocean,
mm-hmm.
and you face all the same perils that the salmon on our journey that we faced. But the difference is when steelhead come back in upriver, they spawn and then they do not die. They go back into the ocean to live another year, come back another year and spawn. I just talked to someone today. They tagged a steelhead and it made seven spawning cycles without getting caught, eaten, or other. So that's kind of that's a big difference between a steelhead and a salmon, in that the salmon do die.
So do the steelhead hang out in the ocean as long as the salmon do? Because if the salmon hang out like out there for 3 or 4 years, do the steelhead do that as well, or do they?
They can. They can start coming back. Well,
earlier?
Even salmon can start coming back as a 2-year-old. And if
those
not,
are called jacks.
Yeah, very good. I don't know why they're not called Sallys, but they're called, you know, that's gender
jacks.
Specific.
Yeah.
But I think they tend to be males, or most or all
that's
males.
What I've
heard. They're jacks.
Yeah.
And so, but the small ones come up, and where were we going with that?
Steelhead.
Oh, yeah, steelhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, the steelhead come up, and there's not anything called a jack. It's just a steelhead.
Right.
Yeah, but again, they go up. And if you catch them on the way back, they're called reruns because they've spawned out. Now they're going back to the, and people still fish for them going up and going down.
So are there are limits to how many salmon you can catch? Are there limits to steelhead as well?
Yes. The steelhead, you can keep 2 per day as you can keep salmon 2 per day. However, you can only keep 1 wild steelhead per day of your 2. Okay, and then now
I know I'm scratching my head.
Yeah, okay. Let's see. Let's go back to the why we were seining the adults, what
mm-hmm.
you saw and what I like. Okay, when we gather the adults, they're called broodstock, and they go into a truck, as you would see on next Tuesday, and you might have saw when you saw it
mm-hmm.
before, and they are taken to Elk River Hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
And at the hatchery, they're spawned out, and that's where the babies mm-hmm. are kept,
right.
become smolt eventually, and then those smolt are brought back to the Checo River.
And released.
But they're called hatchery fish.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're a hatchery fish, the adipose fin, it's a little fin near the tail,
mm-hmm.
the caudal fins, the adipose, that is clipped on all hatchery fish.
And that way you know.
That way when you catch an adult,
right.
you will see that it's fin clipped.
Right.
So they'll call it fin clipped or hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
Fish that have the adipose fin unclipped are called wild fish.
Okay.
That's a big distinction there.
And there's more of a limitation on catching wild fish?
Let's see. Particularly steelhead, you can keep 2 wild or 2 hatchery salmon.
Mm-hmm.
However, with steelhead, you can keep only 1 per day and only 5 per year.
Oh,
in the system. So you're very limited about the wild fish that you can keep with a steelhead.
Is there a difference if you, in terms of eating, is there a difference between wild and hatchery?
That's a debatable question.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot tell a difference, but where some people really see it is in maybe when they catch a fish on. I mean, some are able to go, oh man, this is a wild fish because the way it's fighting.
Really?
I don't know whether there's truth to that, but I've heard that more than once. Oh, this isn't fighting, it's just it's a hatchery. But I don't know if that's definitely true or not.
Yeah, and why wouldn't they fight just as hard?
Exactly.
I mean, they don't want that hook in their mouth any more than the other guys do.
But back to the program that we're doing now. Let's see. We just recently put in 160,000 salmon smolt into the Chetco River.
160,000?
Yes, it was done a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
They were dropped off at Social Security Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why behind my house, I can see all the boils and all the smolt boiling, but you can also see all the birds that are feeding.
Oh, of course they know.
Right. So now, there next Tuesday, besides that big salmon rodeo I talked about,
mm-hmm.
we have 20,000 little babies, little smolt, up at Ferry Creek Reservoir in Brookings.
Oh, okay.
And they're in what is called a net pen. They arrived about 10 days ago.
Okay.
And now these 20,000 we feed every day, uh-huh. usually twice a day. Our volunteers do that. Now, of those 20,000, they're all hatchery, so mm-hmm. they're all fin clipped.
Okay.
But another thing that they have is a coated wire tag that is in their snout. It's a little coated wire tag, mm-hmm. CWT, that's in their snout that lets, when they're caught later on as adults, mm-hmm. you can take that coated wire tag and find out information about those fish, where they were hatched, where they were from primarily.
Right.
So,
Go ahead.
20,000. Tuesday morning, we were going to release that first batch of 20,000 Ferry Creek salmon smolt into the Chetco River, and we do that at Snug Harbor, which is a little bit below Social Security.
Okay.
Okay, it's called, yeah. And then we'll receive another 20,000 of the same to start the process of feeding, right. acclimating them for
wow.
2 weeks.
Wow.
And so this acclimating gives them that imprint. Remember, like in our field trip journey, we knew where to go back to?
Exactly.
That's the imprint we're giving them by keeping them in the Ferry Creek water, which flows into the Chetco River.
Right.
They get imprinted so that when they go out to sea, they will know
they
where to,
know
come,
where
back
to come back to.
Yeah. So this coated wow. wire tag is fascinating.
Yeah.
The whole thing is fascinating.
Yeah.
So all the Ferry Creek, 40,000 of them will have a coated wire tag in their snout. Of the 160,000 smolt that were planted 2 weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
directly from the Elk Creek hatchery to the river.
Right.
They didn't spend any time in our Ferry Creek.
Right.
They went hatchery to the river. 40,000 of those have a coated wire tag.
Okay.
And so you keep that number, 40,000 Ferry Creek, 40,000 there, and then you get an idea of, well, which return is maybe stronger? Which ones
okay.
are predominantly coming back? Now
okay.
we're starting to show up now in our study. These Ferry Creek fish are doing well in survival and returning.
Are they doing better than the ones that are just kind of... We don't know
that's
yet.
That's the question.
Mm-hmm.
There is this idea, well, they've spent more time, longer period of time
mm-hmm.
being acclimated
mm-hmm.
in Chetco River water,
mm-hmm.
so maybe the imprint is stronger.
Right.
And so we're...
Because they have to go back somewhere, right? I mean, when the urge to mate or to mm-hmm. spawn, they have to go somewhere to do that.
Correct. And some fish do go up the wrong river,
mm-hmm.
and they call them strays.
Dumbbell.
And but we were smart in our journey, weren't we?
We were very smart.
I know you wanted to go up the wrong river, but I corrected you,
now,
sis.
Now, come on.
No, it's this way. It's like Finding Nemo, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Dory.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
So where was I going?
So they go, some of them go up the wrong river.
Yes.
But every salmon goes somewhere.
Yes.
Because that urge to... reproduce.
Yeah, and it could be 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, which get even bigger. We have 50 and 60 pound salmon in the Chetco River.
Wow.
We have big salmon that come up.
Wow.
So back to the hatchery.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's important that you realize, I mentioned we released the 160,000 at Social Security,
mm-hmm.
and the Ferry Creek are even lower in the river system towards the mouth
okay.
at Ferry Creek. That's important because we do not release them upriver, okay, farther upriver.
Mm-hmm.
Reason, we're trying to keep the hatchery fish low in the system because there is that concern of you don't want the hatchery fish spawning in the same area as the wild fish.
Why?
It gets to be some of it's political, but they're trying to keep the strains pure, wild only. Spawning with wild fish.
Okay.
And then the hatchery fish is there to increase the angling opportunities for me and you to go out and catch salmon.
Right.
So that's a reason to release them lower in the system.
So the wild guys are going to go up farther up the river farther.
Much farther up.
Really?
And then you could say, why don't you ask me, how do we know that?
How do we know that, Dave?
Great question, Candace.
Are you glad I
asked? So glad you asked that question. Okay.
I love talking to you.
This is perfect. It's being that high school teacher, and sometimes you got to wing it because I didn't prepare, and you tell stories.
Here we go.
The truth be known.
I love it.
So anyway, what was the question? I forgot. What? You asked me the question.
I forgot, too.
Why? Why are they... Why?
We're having way too much fun here.
Why? Yes. Okay. How do we know the wild are going up and not the hatchery?
How do we know that?
Come December, after the spawning is over, and they've had rains and their water level has gone up in the Chetco quite a bit and maybe dropped a little bit, we go up river in drift boats and we take different segments of the river and we do what is called carcass collection and sampling. Dead salmon carcasses
that
don't
like
smell
a lot of fun.
Real well, but it's part of what
stinky.
We do. Yeah, it's a stinky job. But if you've had especially some high water, we're not just looking in the water for these carcasses. We're looking in trees and shrubs because the water was very high at one point.
Oh my!
And we look everywhere, and so we find them up, quite up the bank ways when the water's dropped. So when we find a carcass, we do a scale sampling, and the scale sampling is done to determine the age of that fish, which helps determine how strong the run is.
Right.
You get lots of 3-year-olds or even 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds. We find out if it's a wild or hatchery. And majority of the time, almost all the time, we find wild fish.
No
up
kidding.
There. That's an indicator again, this hatchery program, they're staying low.
Right.
They're not migrating upriver, straying upriver, which is important.
Yeah.
And we also, what do we determine? We measure the length of the fish and we determine if it's a male or female. And all that data is processed by ODFW. And they come up with extrapolating formulas, I've learned there's so many formulas out there. But it's only as good as the data goes in,
That's right.
And so that's helps determine how the strength of that run and actually what the strength of the next run will be or next runs.
So. It's fascinating to me that you can do all of that research with just testing a fin or, clipping a fin or what. It's just, it's amazing to me.
Well, the science technology has come a long way, of course, and this coated wire tag has helped a lot. But in order for the coated wire tag to work, you need to actually collect the coated wire tag.
Right.
And so when we came in 2 weeks ago, one of my fish was a hatchery fish, fin clipped. And so when we come in, there's what they call fish checkers at the port.
Okay.
And they come along and they check your fish.
Mm-hmm.
They record the size, the weight, male, female, and then they take a wand, special electronic wand, they wand the nose, and then if there's a chip in it, it beeps. And when that happens, they take the snout off, the upper part of the snout, put it in a bag. And that's where it goes for scientific study. They extract the coated wire tag and they find out all the data.
That's great.
Now, we as a club, our Oregon South Coast fishermen, we have a program which is called a snout recovery program. We want to encourage fishermen that catch a hatchery fish, whether it be in the ocean, the estuary, or the river. If it's a hatchery fish, we would like them to turn in the snout. And so we have snout recovery boxes, ones at Social Security, and ones in the fish cleaning station at the harbor. And so to encourage that, we have a raffle in November where we buy 4 really nice high-end rod reel combinations. Nothing like a fisherman to like a rod and reel like some people love shoes.
Yes.
But we shouldn't go there. But I can't have enough rods and reels.
Especially if they're really good ones.
Yeah. So we do that as a club to help gather the data to encourage them to return in their snout to have this continue the study.
Because there are no fish checkers then up on the river.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're relying on people to go, I got a hatchery. I'm going to cut the snout off, put it in this bag, fill out the card, put that in the bag, and then maybe win a rod and reel.
Yeah. Yeah. So. It's certainly worth it,
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's part of another thing that we do.
So how many members do you think Oregon South Coast fishermen has.
I not only think, I just did that,
I looked at it. So you actually know.
Well, we had a club meeting on Wednesday, and new members have been signing up every club meeting.
Oh,
it's been really exciting.
Great.
So I told them, well, in the beginning of January, or might have been the end of January, I looked at our numbers. We had 97 members. As of just Wednesday, we had 135 members, and we picked up two more at that meeting.
Oh, that's
so our
great.
Numbers have been growing, and a large part of it is because of the people are seeing how many things, cool things we're really doing as a club.
And do you have other things? I know that there was something about a fish station down at the port that you guys were involved with.
Yeah, part of the other activities, and let's not forget to come back to the youth angling opportunities that we provide. So some of the projects that we have done, one of them is we redid or helped out with Arizona Pond, getting rid of the cattails and getting rid of the sediment, because Arizona Pond is a fishing trout pond that our youth anglers use.
Where?
I'll come back. Well, that's up in Arizona Beach, up north of Gold Beach.
Okay.
And we'll come back to that.
Okay.
Okay. So the fish cleaning station. Oh, yeah. One of the projects, we refurbished the whole fish cleaning station. We secured a grant from a place called R&E, Restoration and Enhancement. So we applied for the grant, awarded the grant. Then we supplied all the manpower, hundreds of hours that we donated, which we're glad to do, to do the new roof. Well, we had a roofing company to do that, which is thankful that we paid for. And then we did all the piping, stainless steel pipes, all the cutting boards, the new plumbing, new light fixtures, new outdoor screening to keep the seagulls from attacking you while you have fish, painted it. It's awesome. I've had so many positive comments.
And then I've never fished, but I would think that having a fish cleaning station would be an important amenity.
Very, and people are so grateful. We have 8 stations, big, long 10-foot stations, 8 of them to clean your fish. And then the finishing touch, I don't know if it's in the newspaper, happened to on Thursday or Wednesday. We added the finishing touch was this 4-foot by 8-foot sign that shows the Port of Brookings Harbor, really nice color.
It's a beautiful sign.
And it was a thing I kind of thought of, I wanted to do for a long time. And then there's hooks underneath that sign where people hang their fish and they can come take their picture.
Oh.
So now it's recorded.
Oh.
Port of Brookings Harbor. You know, it's where you caught it.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's your catch. It has a scale off to the side where they can weigh their fish. And so we did that, just put that in a week ago.
Oh, that is so smart.
The finishing touch.
Absolutely.
So we're very, very proud of it.
Social media.
Yeah. And exactly. These pictures that people have taken of their fish go everywhere.
Oh, I love that.
And so... And it does have our logo in the lower left corner. Mm-hmm. And some people wonder why the City of Brookings logo is there, because it's at the Port of Brookings Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
But I did go to the City of Brookings and said, hey, I'd like to request some funds. And they said, well, we'll use the funds for. And I explained, and their logo will be prominently displayed. And they said, sure. And they gave us a good chunk of money to help complete this project.
That's great.
So hence, their logo's on it as well.
Excellent. So how many hours do you think went into getting that fish station?
Golly, we worked for 7 days times at least 6 hours a day. Then there was extra days. So, I mean, it added up with the, if you go man hours, we're definitely the hundreds and hundreds of man hours that went into it, because we had a great, great crew that attacked it, and the know-how and
excellent
all that. And we've had, I'm very proud of that accomplishment.
What other kinds of things do you guys typically do?
Let's see. We...
So you said something about Arizona.
Okay.
Which I'm sure is not the state of Arizona.
No, that's right. It is Arizona Beach, Arizona Pond, which is north of Gold Beach, between Gold Beach and Port Orford.
Okay.
And it's been there for many years. So that kind of leads into the youth side. We provide a lot of youth opportunities through education and angling opportunity. Mm-hmm. Arizona Pond is a big one. The Oregon South Coast fishermen, along with the Curry Anatomist fishermen out of the Rogue River area and the ODFW, we team up, and every third grader in Curry County gets to experience a fishing opportunity at Arizona beach pond. So we plant, ODFW plants the trout. Some are lunkers. I mean, we're talking 6-pounders.
Oh, lunkers.
And
I'm unclear about the trout.
And every third grade, we teach them how to tie fishing knots. We teach them how to cast. And then we actually go with one-on-one, one adult for one child. And then we
are
there on the side of the pond, which we've all made very fishable and accessible now because we worked on the pond.
Right.
And so they catch fish, and so rewarding because many of them have never caught a fish.
Yeah.
And they have the opportunity if they want to keep the fish, which I'd say 90% of the kids do want to keep the fish. So they have to, once they keep it, they have to thunk it on the head. That's kind of important. Well, we can thunk it on the head because you don't want to take a live fish to a cleaning station and a guy with a knife and it, not safe.
No, no.
And I have a thunking story if you want to talk about thumping a fish on the head. But it is kind of funny. But so they take the fish to the cleaning station and they can come back and catch another fish.
Oh, wow.
They can catch up to 5, which is a limit.
Wow.
And then they take the fish home, and I'm not sure the parents really appreciate it. Maybe some, maybe a lot do because they're bringing home fish, but yeah, that's a unique.
But it's edible, right?
Oh,
the,
yeah.
The fish are edible, so.
Yeah.
I'd be thrilled if my child walked in the door with dinner.
But it's an experience that even the parents that went through it remember, they commented about.
Kidding.
Now they're taking their kids.
Because
parents can come and watch the activities, which many do.
No, it's a great educational experience. I mean, you know, I mean, we live here in the middle of paradise.
Absolutely.
And fishing is huge here. So what better than to pass that on to our children?
And again, we just take such pride in it. It's very rewarding. Again, I'm so impressed with how many volunteers show up to our events. Very amazed, very proud of that. Another thing we do with youth, it's called the Eggs to Fry program in the local Brookings schools.
Okay.
Oh, and outside the area too. Working with ODFW, we go in and set up the aquariums in the third grade classes. And then we bring them fertilized eggs, explain the life cycle of salmon, take them on the journey. And then they got to take care of those eggs. They got to keep the certain temperature because they learn if they don't keep that temperature just right, it can go south and the eggs could die. You know, the fertilized eggs can die. It's very specific.
Okay.
And so then after a couple of weeks, they hatch. And then we take the fry and grow them a little bit. And then they take them to Alfred Loeb and they actually release their own salmon fry into the water.
Oh, wow.
Some give them names even.
Oh, I love that. Bambi.
So,
no, that was not
a
fish.
Right.
That was not a fish.
And they think those fish start the whole journey, you know. And
oh, that's remarkable. And so, what fun.
It is. Then at the Azalea Festival, which is real popular for us in Brookings, as you know, we do a kids' fishing ponds where the kids have an opportunity to catch fish, trout, free right there and keep the trout.
I think last year, wasn't it in the Ray's parking lot?
That's where we always have set up.
Okay.
The Ray's parking lot area.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
And it's real popular.
Yes.
Let's start lining up before we're even ready. The kids
love that.
So that's another thing we do with the youth education and the angling opportunity. And then we also take them to with ODFW and their personnel, we help assist where they learn a lot. They have stations, kids, 30 kids at a group go through different stations about what happens in the riparian world and what happens in the river system and how does the water get monitored and tested. And then we play a game with them where it's like our field trip. You start with 30 kids, you pick 2 that are gonna be the seals, 2 that are gonna be fishermen, 2 are gonna be orcas, and then that's like tag.
Oh,
we release
great.
All these kids, and they have to get through a jump rope. And if they touch, they're done. And then now they got through the jump rope, and here are the 2 seals trying to tag you. And if they tag you, you're out.
Oh, I love it.
But in the end, 1 or 2 kids get through.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they get this idea of, the life of a salmon is a tough journey.
So when you say that you release 160,000, if only 1%,
or 2%.
That, or 2% is going to make it back up. That kind of puts it into perspective.
Correct. Right. The 2 that are remaining, like the kids that made it through, everybody is looking and go, Well, there's only two that made it through all that. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
So.
I love that.
Thanks. It's fun to do.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so fun to work with kids anyway.
Oh, you know, absolutely.
They're like sponges. They want to learn, and it's just fun. So tell me what, if somebody wanted to join the group, you know, give me some ideas about, you know, how they would find out more information, you know, when your meetings are.
I can do that. Love to. We meet the third Wednesday of every month. We meet at 6 p.m. at the Checo Community Library. And that is what we call our general club meeting. I post in the upcoming activities. We often have a guest speaker. If we don't, we have our own in-house speakers because we give fishing tips. We talk about what the latest tech gear and techniques are. Get to share the fish stories where the fish is caught, but it tends to get bigger.
I was when just going to say, don't those fish tails just keep getting bigger?
It often does. And then, so it's...
But that's part of the fun.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Of course it is. And we do have a Facebook page, Oregon South Coast Fishermen. And we have a webpage, OregonSouthCoastFishermen.com, where people can check us out and find out all about us. So...
And it's more than just doing a lot of volunteer work, which is admittedly crucial in our community because that's the way things get done here. But it's also, you know, making friends and finding other people who share your interest.
Oh yes, it's some work, but we look at even that work as play. It's a lot of fun, like you said, interacting with the kids and the program, working with working with ODFW, them relying on what, you know, us to help. It's all part of what we like to do. Besides our own fishing group, we have people that are, we consider them our tuna fleet. They're a big tuna fishermen, and I have the opportunity to go once in a while, but to target tuna, you've got to go quite a few miles out to sea.
I was going to say, that's way out there, isn't
yes,
it? It's like 20 miles
or
something?
20, 50, 60 miles that you're going out in that range.
The ocean really changes out there. From what I've heard, there's different currents. It's a completely different ocean than what's close to shore here.
And with today's technology, our tuna guys study the terrafin reports, and the whole thing with tuna is finding the right temperature. They like the warmer water.
Ah.
Salmon like that 52 degrees.
Okay.
With tuna, you're trying to find that 60 degree water, which doesn't happen very often out of Brookings.
No.
Oftentimes, our group goes all the way up to Charleston, launches out of Charleston, and goes out because that warmer water, you talk about the currents,
right,
tends to come swinging closer out of Charleston than here.
Isn't that
interesting? But once in a while,
yeah,
it's out of here, and they're on it.
Wow.
So that's just one of the things. Halibut is a big thing here.
And what do halibut like? Where do they hang out?
Let's see. Anywhere 170 to 300 feet of water out of Brookings. Other places, you have to go even deeper.
Wow.
And they're on the bottom.
Oh,
dwelling
okay.
on the bottom. And you can basically go out there and put a 2 or 3 pound ball weight on and drop your bait down onto the bottom and bounce the bottom until you hopefully get a bite. But some of our group, they've caught, one was 100 pounds halibut out of here. Numerous 70 pounders have been caught, 60 pounders, 40 pounders.
That's huge.
It's a big fish.
Wow. Yeah.
So, and you can only keep one per day and mm-hmm. six per year halibut.
Wow.
And we have a quota. Well, all fish have a quota.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't even talked about bottom fish yet, but could it today or another time.
Bottom fish are like
a lot of us target the bottom fish. And that bottom fishing out of Brookings here is excellent because you don't have to go very far.
Okay.
Just out the jaws and hang a right or hang a left. And the bottom fish are your rockfish,
mm-hmm.
lingcod, cabazon.
Okay.
And you have black rockfish, canary rockfish. You have China rockfish, quillbacks, blue rockfish. There's many, many different species of rockfish. Hence that beginning when we talked about lake versus ocean.
Yeah.
You drop down, you're not sure what you're going to get.
Yeah.
And that's fun. And the lingcod fishing is very good.
And that's all good eating, too, from...
Oh, yes.
You know, I've had some, but, you know... Yeah.
And then cabazon as well. But in that kind of the theme of quotas and limits and seasons, rockfish can be affected too. Just if I could touch on it briefly.
Yeah.
Let's see. Last year, we started this season with 7. And then towards the end of the year, you could keep 7 rockfish, 2 lingcod. And the lingcod have to be 22 inches or longer. And then all of a sudden, the quota was reached. ODFW said, you're shut. No more bottom fishing. I think it was in August.
Wow.
And it was like, what?
Right.
And we didn't have a salmon season either.
Oh.
And so we're all, it's like, oh dear. And that hurt our economy.
Oh, yeah.
And it was tough.
Yeah.
So we anxiously awaited January's, or what's the, are we going to have a bottom fish
right,
season?
Well, exactly.
We did. And they had it 5 fish to start.
Okay.
But then, not too long ago, it was sometime in the summer, that 5 fish was reduced to 4.
Oh.
But still, we could go out, get our 4 rockfish, and then 2 lingcod.
Right.
And then they bounced back a bit, so we returned back to 5. And then I just read an email from ODFW, a press release a couple of days ago, that they were thinking, well, do we have to close it by before December 31st or reduce it again? Mm-hmm. Found out they don't. We get to keep the 5 all the way through this season.
Good, good.
So that can vary.
And it's interesting how it changes, you know, kind of midstream, you know, that you go from 5 to 4 and
none. Yeah.
Or none.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's all about when the fish checkers check the fish and then they extrapolate how many are actually being caught through the formula. And all of a sudden it's time, well, you're getting close to the black rockfish quota. So that's primarily the one we catch here is black rockfish.
Okay.
But a case in study was a few years ago, we could keep 0 canary rockfish.
Oh.
It went from 0, 0, then 1 to 7.
Oh, that's wonderful.
All of a sudden, you could keep all your whole limit.
Oh, that's great.
You know, because they rebounded so well.
Good.
So.
Dave, unbelievable.
No, it can't be over.
I don't know what to tell you. This happens every single time. I know. An hour goes by.
I'll say.
Like crazy. So, we are just about out of time.
Oh, dear.
Do you have any final thoughts?
Well, if you like to fish or you want to learn how to fish or you want to go fishing in the ocean, our club is there to assist with that. So please check us out. It's $20 to join as an individual membership for the entire year, $30 if a family membership. And we give fish, not only tell fish stories, we tell fishing tips. And we're more than happy to set you up on a boat and go fishing.
That's great. I also want to mention that the Oregon South Coast Fishermen have recently become a sponsor for KCIW, and I want to really thank you for that. It's really important for community radio to be supported by its community, and you guys are awesome. So thank you so much for doing that.
Proud to do so, and I could see maybe you could be a speaker at one of our meetings to tell us all about your KCIW radio.
I would love to do that.
I think we should set that up.
I would love to do that.
They would like
to
hear that and get the word out.
Great.
For sure.
Another thing that you might just think about is we need a fishing show. Ooh. We would love to have somebody come on and do a regular show where they tell us about fishing. You know, what's happening right now? What's projected to happen?
I think we should do that.
Yes.
I agree. When we're going to sit down and get that dialed in.
Bada bang.
Bada bang bang.
Thank you so much, Dave Keene. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. I enjoyed it immensely.
And I want to thank you for listening. We have an amazing slice of heaven here. Let's all work together to keep it beautiful and keep making it better for all of us. This has been Our Community. I'm Candace Michelle.
The opinions expressed here are those of the individual participants. Curry Coast Community Radio takes no position on issues discussed in this program.